Hi, I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
And I'm Maurice McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk about living the food life in Philadelphia and beyond. This week, we're talking turkey soup, sourcing spices, and what happens when well-reviewed recipes disappoint us. But first, let's talk about something we read this week. As you know, in my new heart-healthy life, there's not a lot of desserts.
Yes.
But I've really been clinging to chocolate, which is high in antioxidants and paraffinols and I think I just said that wrong. But all kinds of great stuff for your heart and well-being.
Yeah.
So I was excited to learn there's a new type of chocolate.
Which just kind of boggles the mind. How could there be a new kind of chocolate?
I read this story in The Independent, which is comes out of the UK, and the chocolate wizards at Calibo, which is one of my favorite chocolate brands, has a new chocolate that is pink, and they're calling it Ruby. It joins dark chocolate, milk chocolate, and white chocolate as the fourth type of chocolate, and this is the first time that there's been a new chocolate in 80 years.
Wow. Well, you know, what's interesting is that when I first read the story, it also boggled my mind that white chocolate was only 80 years old. I think of it as just being one of the chocolates, but obviously it isn't. And it's cool. I mean, it's cool to have a new kind of chocolate. And the pictures of it are really beautiful.
It is pretty, obviously. As soon as people can buy it, it'll be Instagrammed up a storm.
Oh, I'm sure, because it is millennial pink after all.
And it's not – they don't add anything to it to make it that color. They're just using different different chocolate – different beans. So I guess they weren't making chocolate from these beans before. They were blending them with other beans. And but – even though it's fun and it's pretty, I don't know if the taste is described as being lighter and more fruity, and I'm just not sure that's the type of chocolate I would love.
I know. I don't know that that's what I want for my chocolate, although I could see maybe using it in places where white chocolate feels a little too bland.
Yes.
You know, I could see that that would be a place for it.
Which is every place as far as I'm concerned. Do you like white chocolate?
In very limited applications. Like, I can enjoy a macadamia nut and white chocolate chip cookie on occasion. Mm. But then halfway through, I wish it was like a chocolate chip.
What's your preferred type of chocolate?
I like a not too dark, dark chocolate. I'm not like,
what
like
percent?
A. I'm more of like a 60% kind of person.
I like an 80%.
Yeah.
But you know, I have this affinity for really bitter flavors.
Yeah.
Nothing is too bitter really for me. I don't know. It must just be the way that, I don't know what it is, the way my palate is.
Yeah.
But I'm the same way with coffee. I used to be the same way with alcoholic beverages, and now I'm the same way with non-alcoholic beverages.
Yeah,
the
you want
bitter, the better. So probably not my most favorite type of chocolate, but I always like a fun development in the world of,
yeah, it's cool. This just, that there's something new when you would think that there's no space.
Yeah, just when we thought we knew all the chocolate that there was.
Yeah.
On the, I wonder if it would keep that pink color when you cook with it, because that would be neat.
That would be cool.
It would present a lot of fun presentation opportunities.
Yeah, it'd be fun to put in a cookie or something and have it still be
pink.
Melty pink.
Well, we'll link to the story and you can see the picture. If anybody spots it anywhere in the U.S., let us know. And if we get it, we'll be the first to report back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are you having for dinner this week?
I have been making turkey soup, which seems a little bit crazy because most of the time we think of turkey soup as something that we're only eating around Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah. So tell me more. I have so many questions. I don't want, just tell me the story about your turkey soup.
So
this week.
It's the turkey soup starts in that there's a recipe in my family that my grandmother used to make where it was stewed turkey legs with lots of sliced onions. And so this is my maternal grandmother. She was not really much of a cook. Like, she had three dishes. She broiled steaks. She made roast that was studded with garlic cloves. And she made this turkey soup.
All times of the year, in the cold weather, around Thanksgiving?
Whenever. I mean, I think it's a hearty meal.
It wasn't tied to Thanksgiving, though.
No, it wasn't. Okay. It was, I think of it more as something that you would eat in like January or February when it's really cold. And what you really want is like something that's really savory and, flavorful over like a bowl of rice.
So her version was the braised turkey legs, I guess, with water.
Water and tons of onions.
What was the onions must have been started with some kind of fat, right?
Yeah. So I think she would just, I mean, it was literally like three or four onions sliced into rounds, mm-hmm. Browned in a little, so you would brown the turkey legs and take them out of the pot. And then, you know, in those, in that fond, you'd add a little bit of either olive oil or canola oil. Mm-hmm. And then add all the onions and cook them down. And then mm-hmm. you would sort of nestle the turkey legs in, cover with water, and cook until mm-hmm. the meat was falling
and
off.
And then is it like a, you would shred the turkey into the soup at the end?
Yes, but typically what would happen in that, when she would make it, it really was more of a stewed turkey leg dish.
Oh, okay.
So she would serve everyone a turkey leg. Mm-hmm. And then like leftovers would get shredded.
Gotcha.
And so I've taken that basic framework. Idea. But I do it with a lot more vegetables. Mm-hmm. So I start the same way. I brown my turkey legs and then pull them out and then saute onions and leeks and carrots and cabbage and whatever else I have. I did some fennel recently and, you know, really try to fill the pot about halfway up with veg mm-hmm. and then nestle the turkey legs back in and then cover it with water, add garlic and salt and cook it down for like 3 hours until those turkey legs just are falling apart. And
do you take the skin off at any point?
I take the skin off after cooking. So when I make it, I do remove the legs and I shred mm-hmm. the meat and I take it all apart and I put the meat back in and then I turn it into a real soup. But the turkey legs have a lot of gelatin. Mm-hmm. So you get this really full bodied soup. Like the broth has a ton of sort of mouthfeel. It's really thick, gelatinous, and it's so good. Oh, the other thing I added once I add the meat back in is a bunch of chopped potatoes.
Oh, I was going to ask you if there's any grains.
Yeah. So my mom and my grandmother always served it with brown rice, but I like.
It feels like a wild rice thing.
It would be really great with a wild rice, but it's so good and it makes a ton. And what I love about it too is that turkey legs are relatively cheap. I mean, inexpensive form of turkey.
Where are you buying your turkey legs?
There's at Reading Terminal Market.
Of course.
There's the, you know, the poultry stand. What is it? Godshall's. Mm-hmm. And the turkey legs are cheaper than the turkey wings or the turkey thighs. I guess people aren't really all that excited about turkey legs, but to me, they make such good soup and the meat's really flavorful. And you don't need a lot of it, you know, so I probably did started with like 3 pounds of turkey legs to make this soup.
Which is largely bone.
Yeah. But they give off so much flavor and then the meat sort of drifts into little shreds. It's really good. And so I guess the reason I wanted to talk about it today was primarily just to say turkey is not just
for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Not just for Thanksgiving. And that if you're tired of chicken soup, if you feel like you need a little change, you get a little bit sort of more, depth and deep flavor from those turkey legs. A little goes a long way and they're just not that expensive.
It sounds like a very good idea.
It's so good. And you could put any vegetables you want in. I think that the thing is that you want the sweetness of a lot of onions to sort of counter the slight, you know, because dark meat turkey has a little bit of gaminess, not mm-hmm. a lot, but the sweetness of the onions with the dark meat, they just complement each other so well.
I sometimes say that basically all soups are like secretly onion soups.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times you use the same amount of onion as you use of like whatever your featured ingredient is, or my vegetable soups are that way.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's good. And it's the leftovers are even better because all the flavors mingle. Yeah.
Always. I mean, everyone knows this, but it bears repeating. Whenever you make any kind of soup or stew, it's just so much better as it stands. I mean, up to a point, but those second and third dates are definitely only an improvement.
It's so true.
Well, that sounds delicious.
It was it's really good. It's really delicious.
Now the weather just has to catch up to that.
I know.
Soup and stew recipes.
We're recording this in sort of late September.
It's hot.
And we've still got like another week of really hot weather, and I don't love it. I'm craving real soup weather.
Yeah. To be continued. Yeah. We'll celebrate it when we get it. Okay. Let's talk about spices.
Yeah.
A very important topic.
It's true.
For the home cook.
What's your spice approach, Joy? How do you shop for them? How do you store them?
It's very haphazard.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking I should, you know, go online and order a bunch of stuff from Penzies. But I don't do that. I buy them at Acme or Whole Foods or now Mom's Organic Market. There are two brands that I really prefer though.
Yeah.
Frontier Co-op.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's a terrific brand of spices. And this is going to sound zany, but like McCormick's has a gourmet selection line or a gourmet collection. And it those are really top-notch spices.
Yeah.
And I just buy them when I need them. I wish I could tell you that I go through my spice pantry every year and I purge things that are like old, but I don't.
No, I confess I am much the same way. I was cooking recently and I reached for my ground cumin and it smelled like nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
When I opened the jar and I thought, oh shoot, I really need to refresh some of these things because they're
Can
not.
Can I share something about cumin that I learned from Melissa Clark?
Yeah.
I hesitate to throw whole cumin seeds and stuff for whatever reason, but she has a recipe in her book for braised chickpeas with greens and olive oil. And she just like, there's a generous amount of just whole cumin seeds in there and it's delicious.
Really?
And so, you know, last night I made my beans and greens tacos as I demonstrated on the video.
Yeah.
Which I hope you guys have checked out. And instead of going with my usual ground cumin, I used just a handful, not a handful, but like
a palmful.
Yeah, maybe like 2 teaspoons of cumin seeds. And I think it was better. I think whole seeds, you know, maintain their freshness longer.
Yeah.
And then you know, I put it in the oil at the beginning and just sizzled them a bit to sort of wake them up. And this is not a solution to old spices, but.
Well, but I think that whole spices last longer than pre-ground. And so, you know, if you're stocking whole spices, they're going to give you more flavor for longer, certainly.
It's hard for me to throw out a jar of a spice, even if it smells like nothing. Even I know it shouldn't be. And I've probably written tips that you shouldn't keep it, but it's hard. I'm glad it's not just me.
It is not just you.
So what are your go-to brands and sources?
Well, when I'm – Penzies is always my first stop most of the time. And it really helps now that there's a Penzies in Center City down by the Liberty Bell and Independence Mall.
You just take the bus down that way, right?
Yeah, or when I'm walking, like if I know I'm going to be walking to or fro in that neighborhood.
You think, what spices do I need?
So that's really convenient. I also really love the spices from Mountain Rose Herb, which is, they're mostly organic. Not that I stress that much about the organic, you know, whether or not my spices are organic. But if I'm doing, if I need to replace a lot of things or I'm replacing like pickling spices, which tend to be sort of a more user intensive experience. Like I use, most people aren't going to go through a pound of dill seed in a year. But between all the pickling classes and pickling I do, I can go through more than that. And so at the beginning of the season and the beginning of the pickling season, I will sometimes place an order from Mountain Rose Herb to replenish all of my pickling spices.
Hmm.
Or I'll go to Penzies. But if I'm thinking about it and I'm planning ahead of time, I might do that. And then sometimes, you know, I will hit an independent spice shop, the Head Nut in Reading Terminal Market has spices.
Dan stops in Reading Terminal during the week often, and if there's a spice that we need, I will definitely send him in there to get it in a little plastic baggie.
And then there's the spice shop in the Italian Market. It's right by you.
I've shopped there for spices too. They have tons of spice blends that they make, which something about that makes me feel suspicious. Spice shop shouldn't be about spice blends.
I'm not interested in a blend.
I don't know. That's probably just a prejudice that I have. But I bought spices there too. I'm indiscriminate.
Yeah, I kind of am too. And this next spot is definitely going to make you realize that I'm indiscriminate because I will sometimes buy spices at the dollar store and Aldi. And those are things where often I do that if I'm teaching a class and I'm running low on my own personal supply. And I know that I'm going to be teaching 40 or 50 people how to make pickles this weekend. And I don't want to spend a fortune on like black peppercorns.
Yeah, I mean, spices can get extremely expensive.
And so I don't do this as much for my own personal supply. But if I'm teaching a workshop to a large number of people, I will go to like Aldi or the dollar store and buy, you know, spend $10 to get all the spices I need for the workshop.
Have you noticed a big drop off in quality there or what?
Well, no. And I find that like as long as they're fresh black peppercorns, you're not even grinding them. You're leaving them whole to impart flavor into a batch of pickle brine, that I can't really tell the difference between cheap peppercorns and expensive ones. I will say too, that sometimes I buy my spices in Portland, which sounds kind of ridiculous. So there's this grocery store in Portland called Winco, and it's employee owned and operated, and they have a really great bulk spice section, and it is dirt cheap, like crazy cheap. And so when I go to Portland, if I'm running low on things like whole nutmegs or cloves or something like that, I can stock up for just a couple bucks and just get what I need and then tuck it in my suitcase. And I know it sounds crazy, but it's such a nice user-friendly bulk section too. And so that has served me well over the years.
A couple of spices that I do tend to splurge on are smoked paprika.
Yeah.
I always get that Spanish brand in a tin. The name of that brand is escaping me, but I'll add it to the show notes. And also, I've noticed a big difference in Szechuan peppercorns, which I use a fair amount of.
Really?
Because I love fuchsia, Dunlop's, every grain of rice, and there's plenty of places where it's called for there. And you can really get some not pungent Szechuan peppercorns out there. You want really aromatic, really citrusy ones that I find it's best to get them from like a specialty place like Pensy's.
And I've never really cooked with Szechuan peppercorns. I mean, one thing that over the years I have splurged on is vanilla beans, which is sort of, I don't know if it qualifies as a spice, but maybe. I mean, right now, one thing that's happening with vanilla beans, though, is they've gotten astronomical. Because there was a hurricane in Madagascar that wiped out a lot of the vanilla bean or the vanilla vines.
Interesting.
And so there's a worldwide vanilla shortage right now.
Huh.
So I've been hoarding and, you know, being really parsimonious with my last little stash of slightly dried out vanilla beans because they're so expensive right now.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that. It's global warming is taking all kinds of good stuff away from us.
I know. Well, if you guys have any comments or thoughts on sourcing spices, and, you know, we'd love to hear if you have an organized method or approach to it. It'd be really interesting to hear how everybody else handles their spice pantry.
Actually, before we leave this topic of spices, the word I was trying to say at the top of the podcast as it relates to chocolate is polyphenols. And also, spices tend to be chock full of them. So we forget about that, the health properties that spices have, but they're actually some of the richest sources of polyphenols. And it makes our cooking more delicious and also better for our health.
Interesting.
Okay.
Okay. So
now we can move on from spices.
The next topic for us today is when well-reviewed recipes disappoint.
When I saw this phrase pop up on our planning document, I thought, Marisa has a kitchen story. So tell me all about it.
Okay. So as the regular listeners might know, as the backstory here, my husband has been doing Weight Watchers since January and has lost a fairly significant amount of weight. And one of the things he loves in life is chorizo. But chorizo is incredibly calorie dense. And so it has not been something he's been eating. And so I opened a New York Times cooking newsletter recently, and they were promoting a recipe that Mark Bittman had written for tofu chorizo. And so I thought, hey, I'll give this a try. You know, I know that it won't be just like chorizo, obviously, but maybe if it can mimic the flavors of chorizo, it'll be a good substitute for us. And then I read through the recipe and I thought, this seems pretty simple. Like, it seems kind of overly simple, but I made it. And as I was cooking, I mean, I made a few tweaks. I bloomed my spices in the oil and onion that was sautéing, which he doesn't tell you to do. And I proceeded. And it was not bad, but neither would I call it anything remotely resembling chorizo. And reading through the comments, and it has 325 star reviews. So to me, either everyone who was reviewing it are people who don't remember what chorizo actually tastes like, or just are sort of, you know, giving a blanket 5-star review. So you look like you have many things to say, Joy.
I have so much to say.
Lay it on me.
First off, I have not been reading the New York Times cooking newsletter because I am mad at them.
Oh, because I put it all behind a paywall.
Second, it's more of a thing like, I don't need you. You thought I needed you. I don't need you.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is I got a flurry of text messages this week from my sister and brother-in-law because they made the same recipe. Funny. And they loved it.
Really?
Yes.
I think that they don't remember what chorizo tastes like.
This could be. I mean, like, they made it for dinner one night as tacos. Jill took it to work. It's in, like, a bowl. Like, they all loved it, even the three-year-old. Like, okay, so this was your experience with that chorizo, but
I will say.
And this happens to me a lot of times. I don't like something that other people love.
It wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't a bad recipe. It doesn't taste bad. It is not chorizo.
But on another track, I have another recipe to tell you about.
Okay.
I haven't tried this recipe, but I trust that you would get better results.
Okay.
So as I don't – Kenji Alt Lopez or Lopez Alt. I can never remember which order his name's
Kenji going. From Serious Eats.
Yes. He every year does a vegan – a 30-day vegan thing, and he writes about it, and he creates tons of recipes. And they've been very good when I've made them. I actually, now that I'm trying to like move towards a more plant-based diet, I refer to it all the time. And I too love chorizo in tacos, with breakfast. I just love it. And he has a recipe that he swears is a dead ringer for chorizo. But let me tell you some more things about it.
Okay.
He calls for tofu, tempeh, and dehydrated lentils.
Okay.
There's a lot of spices. I think there's canola oil as well as coconut oil to like replicate the different types of fat and plenty of it. I noticed that Mark Bittman recipe has only 2 tablespoons of fat. I mean, like
I doubled
chorizo that.
That
you're trying to replicate here. And so I did not make this because it's a project.
Yeah.
It seems like a pretty big project. I think it's freezer friendly though.
Hmm.
I definitely flagged it to try at another time. And if Scott is really into chorizo, and you have the time to dedicate to it, it might be
a good substitution.
Yes, because if you think about all the different textures in chorizo, like I get why he's like dehydrating lentils to put in the mix. And
yeah.
I see how like a fermented tofu, a fermented tempeh would be a complement to the tofu. And it's, it just does, it has tons of spices in it. It looks, I looked at it, I flagged it for later and I thought I would like to try this, but I'm too busy right now.
Yeah.
But I think that if you had the time to invest and you wanted to treat Scott to something like that, I mean, it's rich, but it's not.
It's still nothing like chorizo. And I, you know, what I might do even is just look at it and borrow the spice profile.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, the tofu, Mark Bittman's tofu recipe, it's not bad. Like, it doesn't taste bad. I definitely think it needs more spices. I added some finely chopped red pepper to it and cooked that down, and it at least that brought some of the color.
Right.
And we ate it in tacos, and we ate it over brown rice as like a taco bowl. And it's a perfectly reasonable taco crumble. It's just not chorizo. But I'm excited to try that Serious Eats recipe. It'll be interesting to give it a shot.
Do you have other examples when you followed a recipe with the results that didn't make you happy?
I remember once I made a cake from a Donna Hay book, and there was nothing, like, it was irredeemably bad. Like, the science of how the cake was put together.
Donna Hay is like the Australian Martha Stewart, right?
Yeah. And so, I mean, there have certainly been memorable examples in my life. I remember also I made a Ina Garten recipe once, and I think it wasn't her fault. I think something was left out of the recipe, and so it...
Oh, like an editing error.
Yeah, because Ina Garten never disappoints. It might have too much butter in it, but it's not going to disappoint.
Right. I mean, I'm really struggling to... I'm sure this has happened to me, but I'm struggling to come up with an example, because, you know, I love recipes. I pride myself on recipe choosing.
I think that's part of it, is that you... Maybe it's because I don't follow other people's recipes so often that my recipe choosing sort of mojo is bad. Could be.
I would have looked at that recipe and thought, this is really more like a tofu scramble than a mock chorizo.
Yeah. So, I mean, I might make something like that again, but I think I'd take it in like a Thai or Vietnamese flavor profile with lots of like red chili.
Oh, it's like a lettuce cup filling? Yeah. I've done that. That's really, really good.
And then I think that I would be much more satisfied with it.
Right. Yeah. That's definitely a winner. I'm sorry that happened to you. I hope you're not discouraged from trying recipes.
No, I'm definitely not. And, you know, the best part of it was simply that Scott wasn't like, well, I'm never trying tofu again.
Oh, was it like a...
He does not eat a lot of tofu. So it was definitely like a, you know, hey, let's start adding tofu into our regular diet kind of a thing. So, it could have been a lot worse than it was.
I guess that's true. Well, onward and upward with the tofu and the chorizo. Another thing you can do, I mean, not to beat a dead horse about a book that I wrote in 2009, but in Almost Meatless, we would recommend maybe that you just like slash the quantity of chorizo down to very, very little and, you know, use like a bunch of mashed pinto beans or like a combo of mashed pinto beans and tofu to sort of pick up those flavors and like give your mouth the suggestion of chorizo. I find that that works really, really well.
You know, I could almost even see like having a little bit of chorizo and then scrambling a bunch of tofu into it to kind of get the flavor and that good sort of bright orange grease.
There's enough grease in chorizo to go around, you know.
Yeah.
So just a thought.
There are definitely many ways to remedy this issue. It was just frustrating.
So what are you loving this week?
So I love golden raisins. Golden raisins are one of my favorite kinds of dried fruit. And the reason I wanted to talk about them is because I feel like they are a gateway raisin for raisin haters.
Dan does not love raisins.
Really? Neither does Scott. Like if, you know, he does not want a baked good with raisins in them.
What I really don't understand about Dan, though, especially since my cholesterol diagnosis, we've been eating tons of oatmeal and he doesn't like raisins in his oatmeal.
Really?
And I'm like, oatmeal raisin is like a absolute classic thing. Yeah.
Well, and so the thing with golden raisins is they tend to be a little bit moister than dark raisins, I find. They plump up a little bit more readily. And in a baked good, they are less
noticeable.
Yeah. So I have a recipe that I make sometimes, an applesauce cake sweetened with maple syrup. And it's applesauce and maple syrup. And then you make oat flour in your blender. It is one of my mom's like childhood hippie recipes.
Wait, help me. Oh, what are you making?
It's a cake. It's an applesauce cake and it's got eggs. It's got a little bit of butter. It's sweetened with maple syrup. And instead of using wheat flour, you grind up oats, rolled oats.
Is there no wheat flour?
No wheat flour. So it's a really easy thing to make if you're cooking for someone who's gluten free. But, I often add golden raisins to it. And I love adding golden raisins and toasted walnuts, but, people in my life are often opposed to nuts and baked goods as well, but I find that I can sneak the golden raisins in and they just kind of plump and they blend in with the color of the cake.
I love nuts and baked goods.
I know. It's crazy.
And just to have a somewhat of a non sequitur,
yeah.
Walnuts also super high in polyphenols. Okay. Moving on.
But the golden raisins, you don't really notice them because the cake is sort of a golden hue and the raisins plump while you bake. So you just end up with these little nuggets of sweetness.
It's like an out of sight, out of mind situation.
It's so good. It's so good. And sometimes I make it with banana rather than applesauce and then it's this lovely banana cake. But anyway.
It sounds like it might be ripe for cholesterol removal.
You could totally take that cake and make it with like a really heart healthy oil instead and it would be delicious.
Yeah. How many eggs are in it?
Maybe two.
It's not bad. Yeah.
You could make it with an egg replacer. Like
send it over. I will. Want to take a look.
It's really good. It's my mom used to make it for like every birthday or for a family birthday party. Mm-hmm. So it's not the cake you make if you're like having a bunch of people over.
Did she frost it?
She did. She would make, if we were being fancy, we'd get a cream cheese frosting, but often it was just served like in a brownie pan with no frosting, but it was just sweet enough to make like my child taste buds light
happy.
Up.
Yeah.
And you know, all that fiber, and it's delicious. Anyway, I'll send you the recipe. We'll post it in the show notes.
That sounds good.
But golden raisins, man, they're so good. And I feel like, you know, if you've got raisin haters in your life, try slipping some golden raisins in. Maybe they won't notice. Of course they might.
Good thinking.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this week's episode. Our thanks go out to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our beautiful logo, to Raina Rose for providing the music, and Dan Call for editing our show. And thank you guys for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. You can sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.